Today's program is brought to you by the Museum of Food and Drink, sparking curiosity about food with exhibits you can eat. For more information, visit mofad.org.
Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. We are a member-supported, nonprofit food radio station. That means that every single thing we do, from broadcasting 35 weekly shows for free, to bringing you exclusive content from sold-out food events across the country, to offering scholarships to high school students, is only possible thanks to the support of our loyal members. And we want you to join the club. Become a member during our 2017 summer drive to get access to sweet swag and pledge your support to the world's only food radio station. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member now. You're listening to Feast Meets West, the show where we tell the story behind your favorite Asian dishes. I'm Linda Liu, and on the line is my co-host in Hong Kong, Iris Van Kerkhove.
Hello from Hong Kong.
We are broadcasting live from Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every episode, Iris and I dig deep on a dish or an aspect of Asian cuisine, and we interview experts on the topic.
Linda and I like to kick off the show with a question for each other. What's the best thing you ate in the past week?
Yeah, so I would have to say these really fresh blue crabs from this place called Crab Palace in Newark, New Jersey. Super random. Long story short, my family and I tried to go crabbing at Seaside Heights in Jersey, and it was just terribly windy day. And then we went out on the pier, and then we got these tiny little crabs that we couldn't really keep. So then we gave up, and then we drove to this crab wholesaler, and then we got half a bushel, which was 60 crabs for $85, and they were amazing.
Cool.
What about you, Iris?
Because I had crabs too.
Wait. You did? Okay.
I mean, I ate crabs. I ate crabs too. Meal of the week was I went to Ronin, R-O-N-I-N, and that's sort of a sister restaurant to the restaurant that I work at in Hong Kong. And it's a modern izakaya that's seafood inspired, and every day they get fresh, whatever's the menu changes every day because they get whatever is freshest at the market. So one of the dishes I had was Korean fried crab, little crabs that are fried, and you eat the whole, they're small, so you just put the whole thing in your mouth, and it's the sauce is inspired by Korean fried chicken.
That sounds so great.
Yeah.
Crab themed. Awesome.
Today we're going to be talking about a noodle dish that may not be the heaviest trending noodle dish on a global scale right now, but it is definitely one of the most important in Chinese cuisine. It literally means fried sauce noodles and is known as a northern Chinese, or more specifically, Beijing noodle dish. That said, it is quite popular around the country, including here in Hong Kong. Is basically thick wheat noodles topped with a rich sauce that's made by simmering stir-fried ground pork or beef with fermented soybean paste. Yellow soybean paste is traditionally used, but you'll find all kinds of variations in other parts of the country, like sweet bean sauce, hoisin sauce, soy sauce, or fava bean sauce.
Yeah. In the studio with me today is Eric Z of The Tang, which is a contemporary Chinese noodle bar in the East Village. Eric was born and raised in Taipei, Taiwan, and he grew up eating all sorts of Chinese food. He came to New York City to attend NYU and was surprised by the lack of Chinese food options outside of Flushing. While working for Chipotle, Mighty Quinn's, and Momofuku, Eric developed a love for restaurants and for the impact that they can bring to a community. Opening the Tang was a no-brainer for him. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome, Eric. Before we get into Jajangmyeon and noodle culture, can you tell us a bit about yourself and what you do at the Tang?
Sure. So I own and operate the Tang out of the East Village. The Tang really started for my love of Chinese cuisine. And as I grew older and older, I'm guilty of eating pretty much only Chinese food. Because when you stick with Chinese food, you can have so many different genres within this cuisine alone. You can have, you know, Shandong Cai, like the Shandong province food, or you have Sichuan food or Cantonese food. The list goes on and on. So Chinese food is really just like a huge genre, and my diet tends to stick to that specific piece. And so operating the Tang, I get to experiment with new dishes, with the new flavors within Chinese food. And as, you know, globalization starts to take place, it's easier and easier to get ingredients that would have been a lot harder to find years ago. Even just 5 or 6 years ago, it was difficult to find high quality Sichuan pepper, but now it's coming straight from Sichuan. So what a time to be alive and in the restaurant industry.
That's awesome. And it sounds so great that you are showcasing the variations of Chinese cuisine within your shop. So growing up, so you were in Taipei. Did you specifically eat like Taiwanese food there, or did you like travel around China? You had like parents from different parts of China. What, you know, did you eat growing up?
So growing up, it was eating a lot of different types of food. So my father is what I like to call an OG foodie. Like in his time, the term foodie wasn't invented yet. And I found a lot of people in his generation have a deep passion for food, especially after the economic boom that happened 30 years ago. People had a lot of disposable income and then started developing this passion for food. And so growing up, my father would force a very complex cuisine in my diet, I guess. So we would go for Italian, we would go for French. We would obviously have a lot of Chinese food. But the diet really was restricted to what Taiwan had to offer. Because we as a child, I didn't travel a lot. We traveled with the two neighboring countries of Taiwan, like Japan. We've been to China a couple of times. But I have yet to really trek to really the different regions of Southeast Asia. So it was a lot of what Taiwan had to offer. And it was, at the time of me growing up, it was a lot of Western food, American food, as I mentioned, Italian, French, but mostly Chinese food. My father's family is from the Shanghai area, while my mother's family is from the Sichuan area. So they have very...
a good mix of flavors there.
Yeah, so they have very different preferences when it comes to food.
Yeah. Can you tell like the listeners who aren't familiar with how like Shanghai food is different from Sichuan food?
Sure. So Shanghainese food tend to be a little bit on the sweeter side. A lot more deep fried dishes with a bit more starch, because they like to stir fry noodles. As you may all know, the Xiaolongbao is from the Shanghai area. So Shanghainese food tends to be a lot sweeter with a little bit more seafood, because it's closer to the sea. And Sichuan food, as most people know, is very spicy. It's very heavy, very oil dense. It's not so much deep fried, but it's almost like confit.
Yeah.
A lot of dishes are confit in chili oil. The story behind it is because people had to, because Sichuan is very hot, it's very humid, so you have to eat a lot of spicy food to make yourself sweat out the liquid inside of you.
Yeah, that happens a lot in like kind of the Southeast Asian countries too.
Yes.
So let's bring it to noodles. What motivated you to open the Tang?
Well, as mentioned, it was during my school years, I had a very difficult time finding good Chinese food.
Mm-hmm. In New York. It was through your passion for food, honestly.
Yes. It really was just a passion thing. There wasn't any indication that I would open a restaurant and operate it out of college, but
got it. Like, you're not coming from like a family that expected you to open a restaurant. Like, did you think that growing up you would be in the food industry?
No, I've never thought of it, actually. It wasn't until I opened the restaurant that I reflect, like, oh wow, I own a restaurant now. It's kind of weird. But the only industry my dad told me not to enter was the restaurant industry.
Even though he like loved food so much.
Yes, because a lot of his friends were in the restaurant industry, so he knew it's backbreaking labor with very high risks.
Yeah. Very Asian thing to say.
Yes, indeed.
As we hear. So talking about jiajiangmian, how do you define your ZJM, as you call it, on your menu? And what are the qualities of a good bowl of jiajiangmian?
So I guess I'll answer the second part of the question first. A good bowl of jiajiangmian really just has to be comforting. Jiajiangmian in itself is really comfort food for all kinds of Chinese cuisine, especially if you're from a region that has jiajiangmian deeply rooted into the cuisine itself. So for me, it has to have, well, the noodle, obviously, the most important aspect of the dish is the noodle. The noodle provides the texture, and that kind of boils down to personal preference. But I prefer noodles to be chewier, as the Italians call it, al dente, right? It's a bounce to the tooth. As some other people may prefer the less chewy noodle, but more of a, how do you describe it? It's softer. Mm-hmm. It's not as bouncy. But I prefer chewier noodles. And for the sauce, it has to pack a lot of umami flavor and the pork flavor. As Iris mentioned, jiajiangmian literally means fried sauce noodles. So when you fry the sauce, it caramelizes the yellow bean paste and gives it a different layer of flavor of umami that I really look for when digging into a bowl of jiajiangmian. And then it's the other ingredients that kind of make it. And depending on where you're from, if you're from Beijing, it could mean some peas, it could mean carrots, it could mean scrambled eggs. Or if you're from Taiwan, it could mean tofu that just mixes into the noodles.
Yeah, so would you say the regional variations of jiajiangmian are mostly like the ingredients that go into the sauce, or is it like how it's eaten? What are some differences?
So I would say the ones that I've noticed would be the preference of the area or what the region has to offer. Mm-hmm. So in Taiwan, as you mentioned, there's people prefer less of a savory flavor. People don't eat too salty of a flavor. Mm-hmm. So the jiajiangmian in Taiwan is a little bit on the sweeter end, but still savory. So the Taiwanese jiajiangmian uses tianmianjiang, as well as doubanjiang, while as the Beijing style, obviously, they prefer a bit saltier. So huangdoujiang and dajiang is used.
Yeah.
And there's also the variety between using pork belly and just ground pork.
And so going back to some of those Chinese ingredients you use, how would you describe that in English? Doubanjiang
is essentially, it is a yellow bean paste. Mm-hmm. Most of the Chinese sauces is fermented out of the yellow bean. Mm-hmm. One could almost say the yellow bean is the unsung hero of Chinese cuisine. Yeah. Because hoisin sauce, doubanjiang is just, it's bean paste. It's fermented bean paste made very similar to the way of making Japanese people make miso. Mm-hmm.
So the umami is like it's
packed with umami. It is salty, saltier than most misos. And huangdoujiang literally means yellow bean paste, but it is also fermented yellow bean.
Yeah.
The specific ways of fermenting it that yields the different sorts of flavors is I'm not too familiar with. but the end product, the different bean pastes, have very different qualities in terms of whether their texture or their color or their flavor.
Yeah, and then you have the tianmianjiang, which is then sweeter, right?
Yes, much sweeter, literally meaning sweet noodle sauce.
So interesting, like yeah. So many nuances to just like bean sauce.
Yes.
And that's so critical for this dish. So how would you say it should be eaten? Is it like a, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner thing? Is it a formal thing?
It's a very casual thing,
yeah.
For sure. It's street food from where I'm looking at it. It can be in big sit-down fancy restaurants. It's almost like the burger,
mm-hmm.
equivalent to American cuisine,
okay.
where you can have it in a fancy restaurant.
Sure.
And they'll have their own iteration, their own version. But you can find something just as good on the streets,
mm-hmm.
literally for a fraction of the price.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe this, like, utilitarian food.
Exactly.
You have it any way you like. So how do you make your jiajiang mian at the Tang?
So for us, we call it the ZJM because when building the restaurant, we didn't want to confuse our customers. Because if you grew up in Beijing and you came in and you saw jiajiangmian, you would automatically assume it is the comfort food that you grew up with. But I'm not from Beijing, so I can't deliver that. I'm from Taiwan, but again, I can't deliver that super authentic Taiwanese flavor. I just wanted to make some sort of jiajiangmian using the jiajiang technique, the frying sauce technique, to make a dish that is comforting, has good texture, and is accessible.
Yeah. And what was the process that you went through in order to come up with this, you know, perfect formula that you guys came up with?
So we took a look at all the bean pastes. So from dajiang, which is literally translates to big sauce.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the saltier side. It's traditionally found in the Beijing style jiajiangmian.
Mm.
We took a look at that with yellow bean paste, with hoisin sauce, with doubanjiang, the other bean paste that we mentioned. And somehow, I personally love the flavor of yellow bean paste and hoisin sauce combined together with a hint of savoriness and a hint of sweetness, but just packed with umami.
Nice. It sounds like a fun ratio game that you had to play.
Yes. It was a lot of trial and error.
So you also kind of mentioned, like, you know, using it in different noodle dishes, different ways. Do you describe that you have like this kind of mother sauce that you use?
Yes. So our jiajiang has become somewhat of a mother sauce, almost like a marinara sauce that you'd find in an Italian restaurant, because it is so rich with umami and it's got great quality in texture, because when we fry it, we add a bit of flour and water, like a flour slurry, to thicken it.
Mm-hmm.
So when it has that flour, it would thicken anything that it's in. So it's easier to thicken broth with it. It coats noodles a lot better. It gives an extra layer of porky flavor and umami flavor. So when we're testing new dishes, when we feel like something is missing, if we need a bit of umami, instead of adding MSG, we just add this pork sauce.
Yeah, the mother sauce.
And it most of the time, it's delicious.
Right? Yeah, it's like your secret.
Yes. I'm testing this mala stinky tofu.
Ooh.
for probably next month. Carson actually makes it.
Okay, cool.
About it.
Yeah, yeah.
But we braised the stinky tofu in our beef broth, and then testing it, I was like, this is missing a bit of texture and umami, and then in goes a bit of jiajiang, and it's perfect.
That complexity is there.
Yes.
That's so cool. So where else have you had the best like jiajiang mian other than your own? And I know there's so many different types, so this might be a hard question to answer.
This is quite difficult. I would say the best, honestly, because I'm from Taiwan, right? A lot of food is nostalgia, right? Taste is also nostalgia, what you're used to eating when you grow up. So for me, nothing really beats being in Taiwan, being on the streets, and pulling up a plastic bench Yes. And just be like, 老板, you want 炸酱面? Just a bowl of 炸酱面 from the streets, literally less than a US dollar. It's simple. It's just some dried tofu, some of that pork sauce that's on the sweeter end with the 甜面酱 and 豆瓣酱. And then the noodles are thin. In Taiwan, they use thin noodles that are 挂面. 挂面 is dried noodles, essentially. So the texture is not the one that I prefer, but then it goes perfectly well with the sweeter sauce because the sauce is not as heavy.
Got it.
Yes. You don't need a lot of texture to balance the savory sauce. It's sweeter, it's lighter. Yeah.
So many variations. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with more Feast Meets West.
I'm Dave Arnold, the host of Cooking Issues on the Heritage Radio Network. We all know and love Chinese takeout dishes like General Tso's chicken and egg rolls, but here's the thing. Even though we call it Chinese food, it's not like the food you'd find in China. What's the story behind this cuisine, and how did it become so popular that you can find a Chinese-American restaurant in nearly every town in the country? The answers may surprise you. Visit the Museum of Food and Drink in Brooklyn and see our newest exhibition, Chow, Making the Chinese-American Restaurant. Chow engages visitors with compelling accounts of how Chinese immigrants overcame racism and created Chinese-American cuisine. Discover the science behind the flavors of your favorite takeout dishes, feast on rotating tastings developed by the country's most talented Chinese-American chefs, and try your hand at writing your own fortune, which will be baked into actual cookies by a 1,500-pound fortune cooking machine. But what better way to learn, connect, and eat? You can visit Chow at the Museum of Food and Drink on Fridays through Sundays from noon to 6. Tickets and more information can be found at mofad.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Feast Meets West. I have Eric Z in the studio from the Tang. Eric, you were just talking about how when you go back to Taiwan, you get like a bowl of jiajiangmian and you pull up like a stool on the street, right? So can you tell us more about how, you know, Chinese people consume noodles in China, in Taiwan, versus like how people are like eating noodles inside of restaurants here? What's the differences?
Sure. A lot of the street food scene is dominated by noodles. In almost every city that I've been to of the Chinese culture, whether it be Taiwan, Chengdu, Chongqing, Xi'an, Beijing, Shanghai, all of these cities, their street food consists of some type of signature noodles.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because you don't like typically expect that here. Like in the West, things are more like on a stick or you hold it like in your hand.
Yes. I feel like because Chinese people tend to be a little bit more rustic, right?
Cute.
So, cute, yes. So the most interesting thing that I saw was in Chongqing. Where there's this place called Bandengmianzhuang, literally means stool noodle house.
Nice.
So there's no seat inside the... Oh, there are a couple of seats inside the restaurant, but it's very limited. But then everyone sits outside of the restaurant. So how it works is you go and you order with the chef. You choose the size you want. They only have one type of noodle. It's the xiaomian, the Chongqing xiaomian. You order the size you want, and then they bring it to you. You pull up a small stool and a big stool, and you sit on the small stool while your noodle is on the big stool, with the big stool acting as a table, and you just literally eat it off of that on the street, and you're done within 5 minutes, and off to work you go. Oh, by the way, it's breakfast. It's super spicy.
Wow.
Yeah, I was sweating like a pig, but it was delicious, and it was interesting to see.
Yeah, that's really fun. It's really special.
And I love places that just do one thing and do it really well.
Yes, yes. It's often the most difficult thing, because if you only have one thing, you really have to nail it, or you can't survive, right?
Yeah, it's too bad we can't replicate that here, that exact experience. I mean, do you feel like, you know, things will be changing in the city, in the U.S., as the way we eat noodles, like outside of this kind of formal, more like sit-down restaurant style?
I think there's two parts to that, right? I feel like in America, noodle culture is very dominated by ramen. And nowadays, pho. And those, you have to really go inside a restaurant. Almost just, it almost can't really be street food. The way I see, I'm not the biggest expert on these noodles, but why Chinese noodles are so easy to grab and go or like be eaten on the street is because it's normally mixed noodles. It's sauce noodles. There are soup noodles, a lot of soup noodles, but these street food noodles that we talk about, they're mostly sauced, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have the zhajangmian, you have the xiaomian, you have the danzimian, rouzangmian. Mm-hmm. All those things tend to be less brothy, and thus it translates better into street food. And unless mixed or the sauce noodles gain popularity here in the States, I think it's a little bit difficult. But Xi'an Famous Foods is doing a great job by pushing this forward. And you see people in Bryant Park slurping down noodles.
Yeah, it's really great to see the regional variations. Of course, in Chinese restaurants show up in the city, but like specifically to noodles themselves. That's actually happening right now.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's a great movement. I'm happy to be part of it. And I think we're only just getting started.
Yeah, that sounds great. So, I mean, as more noodle shops pop up then, how will you stay differentiated in this competitive landscape?
Well, I just try to do my own thing, really. The thing I think about the restaurant industry, especially the Chinese restaurant industry in New York, it's super friendly,
mm-hmm.
right? People try to help each other out. And there's no sense of competition, even though I'm in the East Village where, you know, for every five new restaurants, four of them are Chinese. There's nothing but love. And
yeah.
I feel like if you do a product well, if you do something well, there's enough customers to go around for everybody. And I think that's what it's all about, elevating Chinese food mm-hmm. as a whole.
Yeah, that's so great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And what would you say is like the mission for the Tang?
The mission, the overall mission would definitely be elevating Chinese food as mm-hmm. the bigger theme. But as for a short-term mission, I would say, you know, I just want people to recognize Chinese noodles more
mm-hmm.
because, as mentioned, ramen and pho have the big spotlight. And as being Chinese
mm-hmm.
from Taiwan, I just want people to realize that, oh, hey, these type of noodles are just as good.
Mm-hmm. And potentially like rising zhajangmian into that same category.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I feel like the qualifications are there. It's mm-hmm. a delicious noodle dish. And people just, it just needs that push, that spotlight.
For sure. And so, you know, as a first-time restaurateur, also curious to hear what are some learnings that you've had so far?
Learning experiences. Well, less to do about food. I feel mm-hmm. like as a restaurant, your food is a given. Your food has to be good. It doesn't have to be good for just one demographic. You can find your niche and be mm-hmm. good to that niche. But I feel like the overall experience of a restaurant is also very important. As a first-time restaurateur, the biggest learning was that building out the restaurant, we should have done a little bit more homework. Even though we didn't screw up big time, but there were a lot of places we could have improved on
mm-hmm.
if we had a tiny bit more research done.
Yeah, it's not easy. You took on a lot.
Yes.
And you did it quickly, too. And so do you have more projects brewing? And, you know, what's next for the Tang?
So what I really want the Tang to be is a Chinese izakaya.
Mm-hmm.
To the general theme of elevating Chinese food, I feel like Chinese food in New York specifically is more of, well, it's very complex nowadays, but before it's just you sit down, you eat, and you get out. People don't really sit down, have a good time, and chill, and drink. That's dominated, well, in the Asian food term, it's dominated by Japanese and Korean food. So I really want Chinese food to be in that category as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's the whole, like, service component that is, yeah, it's different.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a lot of more traditional restaurants when you're, like, packed in with, like, another family at the same table. Or you have, like, some grumpy, like, waiters, but that's, like, part of the charm, too.
Yeah, yeah, that's great, too. I mean, I love that. I love every aspect of that. But I just feel like we can expand.
Mm-hmm.
As an industry, we can expand. As a cuisine, we can expand.
Yeah, and bring it to, like, more and newer audiences.
Yes.
We're doing that.
Yes, and I'm also looking at a couple of more of something like the Tang Express.
Ooh,
places.
Okay.
You know, maybe we'll be popping up in some food halls.
Very cool. Yeah, that's definitely another trend, food halls. So when people say your name, Eric Z, what would you most like to be known for?
I would most like to be known for as somebody who can really represent what Chinese food can bring.
Mm-hmm.
Not in such a grand term, obviously. If people just know my name as connected to the Tang, and they know what the Tang is, that's enough for me.
That's golden.
Yeah, that is golden.
Yeah, awesome. So, Eric, that's it for our show today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you, Iris.
For listeners who want to learn more about you and the Tang, how should they keep in touch online?
Follow us on Instagram. We're very active, me, myself personally, and the Tang itself. My handle is at eze.e, so it's ESZE.E.
We're going to write that down in our show notes.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Eric. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in today. Just a reminder that there's only one episode left of this season, and you won't want to miss it because it's another installment of our Asian Breakfast series. We'll be back next week with another awesome conversation from the world of Asian food.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.